Sergeant Jackram cleared his throat and continued in a level voice. "This, my lads, is what we call a real orientation lecture, not one of the fancy political ones like Strappy gave you." He cleared his throat again. "The purpose of this lecture is to let you know where we are. We are in the deep cack. It couldn't be worse if it was raining arseholes. Any questions?" Since there were none from the bemused recruits, he continued, while beginning a slow stroll around the squad. "We know enemy forces are in the area. Currently they have no boots, but there will be others with boots aplenty. Also, there may be deserters in the area. They will not be nice people. They will be impolite. Therefore, Lieutenant Blouse has decreed that we will travel off the roads and by night. Yes, we have met the enemy, and we have prevailed. That was a fluke. They weren't expecting you to be rough, tough soldiers. Nor were you, so I don't want you to feel cocky about it." He leaned forward until his face was inches from Polly's. "Are you feeling cocky, Private Perks?"
"No, Sarge."
"Good. Good." Jackram stepped back. "We are heading for the front, lads. The war. And in a nasty war, where's the best place to be? Apart from on the moon, of course. No one?" Slowly, Jade raised a hand. "Go on, then," said the sergeant.
"In the army, Sarge,"
said the troll.
"'Cause?"
She began to count on her fingers.
"One, you got weapons and armour and debt. Two, you are surrounded by other armed men. Many, you's getting paid and getting better grub than the people in civilian street. Lots, if and you gives up, you getting taken prisoner, and there's rules about that, like not kicking prisoners in a head and stuff, 'cause if you kick their prisoners in a head, they'll kick your prisoners in a head, so that's like you're kicking your own head, but there's no rule says you can't kick enemy civilians in a head. There's other stuff too, but I ran out of numbers."
She gave them a diamond grin.
"We may be slow, but we ain't stupid," she added.
"I am impressed, Private," said Jackram. "And you are right. The only wasp in the jam is that you ain't soldiers. But I can help you there. Being a soldier is not hard. If it was, soldiers would not be able to do it. There is only three things you need to remember, which are, viz. 1, obey orders. 2, give it to the enemy good and hard. 3, don't die. Got that? Right. You're nearly there. Well done. I propose to assist you in the execution of all three. You are my little lads, and I will look after you. In the meantime, you got duties. Shufti, get cooking. Private Perks, see to the Rupert. And after that, practice your shaving. I will now visit those on guard and deliver unto them the holy word. Dismissed." They remained at something like attention until he was probably out of earshot, and then sagged.
"Why does he always shout?" said Shufti. "I mean, he only has to ask."
Polly appended the horrible scubbo into a tin bowl and almost ran to the lieutenant's shelter. He looked up from a map and smiled at her as if she was delivering a feast.
"Ah, scubbo," he said.
"We are actually having other stuff, sir," Polly volunteered. "I'm sure there's enough to go round."
"Good heavens, no. No, it's been years since I've had food like this," said Blouse, picking up the spoon. "Of course, at school we didn't appreciate it so much."
"You had food like this at school, sir?" said Polly.
"Yes, most days," said Blouse happily.
Polly couldn't quite fit this in her head. Blouse was a knob. Knobs ate knobby food, didn't they?
"Had you done something bad, sir?"
"I can't imagine what you mean, Perks," said Blouse, slurping at the horrible thin gruel.
"Are the men rested?"
"Yes, sir. The dead people were a bit of a shock."
"Yes, bad business," sighed the lieutenant.
"Such is war, alas. I'm only sorry you had to learn so fast. Such a terrible waste all the time. I'm sure things can be sorted out when we reach Kinnick, though. No general can expect young men like yourselves to be instant soldiers. I shall have something to say about that." His rabbity features looked unusually determined, as if a hamster had spotted a gap in its treadmill.
"Do you require me for anything else, sir?" said Polly.
Do the men talk about me, Perks?"
"Not really, sir, no."
The lieutenant looked disappointed.
"Oh. Oh, well. Thank you, Perks."
Polly wondered if Jackram ever slept. She did a spell of guard duty, and he stepped out from behind her with, "Guess who, Perks? You're on lookout. You should see the dreadful enemy before they see you. What are the four S's?"
"Shape, shadow, silhouette, and shine, Sarge," said Polly,
snapping to attention. She'd been expecting this. That caused a moment's pause from the sergeant before he said, "Just knew that, did you?"
"No, sir. A little bird told me when we changed guard, sir. Said you'd arst him, sir."
"Oh, so Jackram's little lads are ganging up on their kindly old sergeant, are they?" said Jackram.
"No, sir. Sharing information important to the squad in a vital survival situation, Sarge."
"You've got a quick mouth on you, Perks, I'll grant you that."
"Thank you, Sarge."
"But I see you're not standing in a bleeding shadow, Perks. Nor have you done anything to change your bleeding shape. You're silhouetted against a bleeding light, and your sabre's shining like a diamond in a chimney sweep's bleeding air all. Explain."
"It's because of the one C, Sarge," said Polly, still staring straight ahead.
"And that is?"
"Colour, Sarge. I'm wearing bleeding red and white in a bleeding grey forest, Sarge."
She risked a sideways glance. In Jackram's little piggy eyes there gleamed a gleam. It was the one they had when he was secretly pleased.
"Ashamed of your lovely, lovely uniform, Perks," he said.
"Don't want to be seen dead in it, Sarge," said Polly.
"Ha! As you were, Perks."
Polly smiled straight ahead. When she came off guard for a bowl of game casserole, Jackram was teaching basic swordcraft to Lofty and Tonka, using hazel sticks as swords. By the time Polly had finished, he was teaching Wazza some of the finer points of using a high-performance pistol crossbow, especially the one about not turning around with it cocked and saying,
"What's this bit for, Sarge?"
Wazza handled weapons like a house-proud woman disposing of a dead mouse, at arm's length and trying not to look. But even she was better with them than Igor, who just didn't seem at home with the idea of what was, to him, randomised surgery. Jade was dozing. Maledict was hanging by his knees under the roof of one of the sheds, with his arms folded across his chest. He must have been telling the truth when he said that there were some aspects of being a vampire that were hard to give up. Igor and Maledict. She still wasn't sure about Maledict, but Igor had to be a boy with those stitches around the head, and that face that could only be called homely. And even then it was the kind of home that has a burned-out vehicle on the lawn. He was quiet and neat, but maybe that's how Igor's behaved. She woke up with Shufti shaking her.
"We're moving. Better go and see to the Rupert."
"What? Oh, right." There was a bustle all around her. Polly staggered to her feet and hurried over to Lieutenant Blouse's shed, where he was standing in front of his wretched horse and holding the bridle with a lost expression.
"Ah, Perks," he said. "I'm not at all sure I'm doing this right."
"No, sir. You've got the waffles twisted and the snuffles are upside down," said Polly, who'd often helped in the inn's yard.
"Ah, that would be why he was so difficult last night," said Blouse. "I suppose I ought to know this sort of thing, but at home we had a man to do it."
"Let me, sir," said Polly. She untwisted the bridle with a few careful movements.
"What's his name, sir?"
"Thalacephalos," said Blouse sheepishly. "That was the legendary stallion of General Tacticus, you know."
"I didn't know that, sir," said Polly.
She leaned back and glanced between the horse's rear legs.
Wow.
Blouse really was short-sighted, wasn't he?
The mare looked at her partly with its eyes, which were small and evil, but mostly with its yellowing teeth, of which it had an enormous amount. She had the impression that it was thinking about sniggering.
"I'll hold him for you while you mount, sir," she said.
"Thank you. He certainly moves about a bit when I try."
"I expect he does, sir," said Polly. She knew about difficult horses. This one had all the hallmarks of a right bastard, one of those not cowed at all by the obvious superiority of the human race. The mare eyeballed and yellow-toothed her as Blouse mounted, but Polly had positioned herself carefully away from the uprights of the shelter. Thalacephalos wasn't the sort to buck and kick. She was the sneaky kind, Polly could see, the sort that stepped on your foot. She moved her foot just as the hoof came down, but Thalassophelos, angry at being thwarted, turned, twisted, lowered her head, and bit Polly sharply on the rolled-up socks.
"Bad horse," said Blau severely. "Sorry about that, Perks. I think he's anxious to get to the fray. Oh, my word!"
he added, looking down. "Are you all right, Perks?"
"Well, he's pulling a bit, sir," said Polly, being dragged sideways.
Blouse had gone white again.
"But he's bitten. He's caught you by the, right on the—"
The penny dropped. Polly looked down and hastily remembered what she'd heard during numerous rule-free bar fights.
"Oh, ah, oh, ah, blimey! Right in a fruit, ow!"
she lamented, and then, since it seemed a good idea at the time, brought both fists down heavily on the mare's nose. The lieutenant fainted. It took some time to bring Blouse round, but at least it gave Polly time to think. He opened his eyes and focused on her.
You fell off your horse, sir, Polly volunteered. Perks? Are you all right? Dear boy, he had you by the...
Only needs a few stitches, sir, said Polly cheerfully.
What? From Igor?
No, sir. Just the cloth, sir, said Polly. The trousers are a bit big for me, sir.
Ah, right. Too big, eh? Phew, eh? Near miss there, eh? Well, I mustn't lie around here all day.
The squad helped him on to Thalassophelos, who was still sniggering unrepentantly. On the subject of too big, Polly made a mental note to see about his jacket next time they stopped. She wasn't much good with a needle, but if Igor couldn't do something to make it look better, then he wasn't the man she thought he was. And that was a sentence that begged a question. Jackram bellowed them into order. They were better at that now. Neater, too.
All right, ins and outs. Tonight we...
A set of huge yellow teeth removed his cap.
Oh, I do apologise, Sergeant, said Blouse behind him, trying to rein back the mare.
No bother, sir, these things happen, said Jackram,
furiously tugging his hat back.
I should like to address my men, Sergeant.
Oh? Yes, sir, said Jackram, looking worried. Of course, sir. Ins and outs. Attend, wait for it. Shun.
Blouse coughed.
men, he said. As you know, we must make all speed to the Kinnec Valley, where, apparently, we are needed. Travelling by night will prevent entanglements. I...
He stared at them, his face contorted by some inner struggle.
I have to say, I don't think we are... That is, all the evidence is... It doesn't seem to me that, I think I should tell you,
Permission to speak, sir, said Polly.
Are you feeling all right? We just have to hope that those put in power over us are making right decisions, mumbled Blouse. But I have every confidence in you, and I'm sure you will do your best. Long live the Duchess. Carry on, Sergeant Jackram.
Ins and outs. Form up. March.
And they headed into the dusk and off to war. About half an hour after the squad had left, the charcoal burner's cat ventured very cautiously back into the hut. It liked the hut. It got fed there. It watched, with suspicion, a stub of candle that had been lit and put very carefully on a pile of straw and dried bracken between the makeshift beds. Its ears flattened as the shrinking candle flared and the waxy straw around it began to crackle. By the time the hut was a mass of flame, the cat was on the other side of the clearing, moving fast. The order of march was as last night, with Maledict going on ahead. The clouds were holding in some heat, and were thin enough to hint at moonlight here and there. Forests by night held no problems for Polly anyway, and this wasn't true wild forest in any case. Nor was it, in truth, a march that they were doing. It was more like a high-speed creep in ones and twos. She'd acquired two of the horse bows, now stuck awkwardly between the straps of her pack. They were horrible things, rather like a cross between a small crossbow and a clock. There were mechanisms in the thick shaft, and the bow itself was barely 6 inches across. Somehow, if you leaned your weight on it, you could cock it with enough stored energy to fire a nasty little metal arrow through an inch-thick plank. They were blued metal, sleek and evil. But there is an old military saying, "Better me firing it at you than you firing it at me, you bastard." Polly eased her way along the line until she was walking alongside Igor. He nodded to her in the gloom,
and then turned his attention to walking. He needed to, because his pack was twice the size of the rest of them. No one felt inclined to ask him what was in it. Sometimes you thought you could hear liquid sloshing. Igors sometimes passed through Munns, although technically they were an abomination in the eyes of Nuggan. It had seemed to Polly that using bits of someone who was dead to help three or four other people stay alive was a sensible idea. But in the pulpit, Father Jupe had argued that Nuggan didn't want people to live. He wanted them to live properly. There had been general murmurs of agreement from the congregation, but Polly knew for a fact that there were a couple of people sitting there with a hand or arm or leg that was a little less tanned or a little more hairy than the other one. There were lumberjacks everywhere in the mountains. Accidents happened. Fast, sudden accidents. And, since there were not many jobs for a one-armed lumberjack, men went off and found an Igor to do what no amount of prayer could manage. The Igors had a motto. What goes around comes around. You didn't have to pay them back. You had to pay them forward. And that, frankly, was the bit where people got worried. When you were dying, an Igor would mysteriously arrive on the doorstep and request that he be allowed to take away any bits urgently needed by others on his little list. He'd be quite happy to wait until the priest had gone, and it was said, when the time came, he'd do very neat work. However, it happened quite often that when an Igor turned up, the prospective donor took fright and turned to Nuggan, who liked whole people. In which case, the Igor would quietly and politely leave and never come back. He'd never come back to the whole village, or the whole lumber camp, nor would other Igors. What goes around, comes around, or stops. As far as Polly could tell, Igors believed that the body was nothing more than a more complicated kind of clothing. Oddly enough, that's what Nugganites thought too. "Glad you joined, Igor," said Polly as they jogged along. "Yeth, Oz. Could you take a look at the Rupert's hand next time we stop, please? He cut it badly." "Yeth, Oz." "Can I ask you something, Igor?"
"Yeth, Oz."
"What are female Igors called, Igor?" Igor stumbled and kept moving. He was silent for a while and then said,
"All right, what did I do wrong?"
"Sometimes you forget to lisp," said Polly, "but mostly it's just a feeling. Little things about the way you move, maybe."
"The word you're looking for is Igorina," said Igorina. "We don't lisp as much as the boys. It's a style thing."
They continued in more silence until Polly said, "I thought it was bad enough cutting my hair."
"The stitches," said Igorina. "I can have them out in 5 minutes. They're just for show."
Polly hesitated, but after all, Igors had to be trustworthy, didn't they? "You didn't cut your hair?"
"Actually, I just removed it," said Igorina.
"I put mine in my pack," Polly went on, trying not to look at the stitches around Igorina's head.
"So did I," said Igorina. "In a jar. It's still growing."
Polly swallowed. You needed a lack of graphic imagination to talk about personal issues with an Igor. "Mine was stolen back at the barracks. I'm sure it was Strappy," she said.
"Oh, dear.
I hate to think of him with it."
"Why did you bring it?"
And that was the question. She'd planned. And she'd been good at planning. She'd fooled the rest of them, even. She'd been cool and sensible, and she hadn't felt more than a faint pang at cutting off her hair. And she'd brought it with her. Why? She could have thrown it away. It wasn't magic. It was just hair. She could have thrown it away, just like that, easily. But... Ah, right. The maids could have found it. That was it. She had to get it out of the house quickly. Right. And then she could bury it somewhere when she was a long way away. Right. But she hadn't, had she? She'd been very busy. Right, said the little voice in inner treachery. She had been very busy fooling everyone but herself, right?
What could Strappy do? Said Igorina. Drakram would knock him over a moment he saw him. He's a deserter. And a thief.
Yes, but he could tell someone, said Polly.
Okay, then say it's a lock of hair from the sweetheart you left behind you. Lots of soldiers carry a locket or something like that.
You know, her golden hair in ringlets fair, like the song says.
It was all my hair. A locket? You couldn't hold it all in your hat.
Ah, said Igorina.
Then you could say you loved her very much.
Despite everything, Polly started to laugh and couldn't stop herself. She bit her sleeve and tried to keep going with her shoulders shaking. Something that felt like a small tree prodded her in the back.
"Yous two ought to keep the noise down,"
rumbled Jade.
"Sorry, sorry," hissed Polly.
Igorina started to hum. Polly knew the song. "I'm lonesome since I crossed the hill and o'er the moor and valley." And she vowed, "Not that one, too. One song is enough, and I want to leave the girl behind me. But it seems I brought her with me instead." At which point, they emerged from the trees and saw the red glow. The rest of the squad were already gathered around, watching it. It covered quite a lot of the horizon, and brightened and faded in places as they watched.
"Is that owl?" said Wazza.
"No, but men have made it so, I fear," said the lieutenant. "That is the Kinnec Valley."
"It's on fire, sir," said Polly.
"Bless you, that's just the light of cooking fires reflected off the clouds," said Sergeant Jackram. "Always looks bad by night, Sir Battlefield. Not to worry, lads."
"What are they cooking, elephants?" said Maledict. "And what's that?" said Polly, pointing to a nearby hill, darker still against the night. On it, a little light was flickering on and off very fast. There was a whoosh and a metallic pop as Blouse pulled out a small telescope and opened it up.
"It's a light, Clax, the devils," he said.
"There's another one over there,"
rumbled Jade, pointing to a hill a lot further away.
"Twinkle, twinkle."
Polly stared at the redness in the sky, and then at the cold little light winking on and off. Quiet, soft light. Harmless light. And behind it, a burning sky.
"It'll be in code," said Blouse. "Spies, I'll be bound."
"A light, Clax," said Tonka. "What's that?"
"An abomination in the eyes of Nuggan," said Blouse. "Unfortunately, because they'd be damn useful if we could have them too, eh, Sergeant?"
"Yes, sir," said Jackram automatically.
"The only messages passing through the air should be the prayers of the faithful. Praise Nuggan, praise the Duchess, and so on and so forth," said Blouse, squinting.
He sighed.
"Such a shame. How far to that hill would you say, Sergeant?"
2 miles, sir," said Jackram. "Worth trying to sneak up?"
"They must know people will see them and come looking, so I expect they won't hang around for long," mused Blouse. "In any case, those things will be highly directional. You'd lose it once you got down in the valley."
"Permission to speak, sir," said Polly.
"Of course," said Blouse.
"How do they get the light so bright, sir? It's pure white."
"Some kind of firework thingy, I believe. Why?"
"And they send messages with light?"
"Yes, Perks, and your point is?"
"And the people who get those messages send messages back the same way," Polly persevered.
"Yes, Perks, that is the whole idea."
"Then maybe we don't have to go all the way to that hill, sir. The light is being aimed towards us, sir."
They all turned. The hill they were skirting loomed above them.
"Well done, Perks," Blouse whispered. "Let's go, Sergeant."
He swung himself off the horse, which automatically stepped sideways to make sure that he fell over when he landed.
"Right you are, sir," said Jackram, helping him up. "Maledict, you take Goom and Halter and circle around to the left. The rest go round to the right. Not you, Carborundum, no offence, but this has got to be quiet, okay? You stay here. Perks, you come with me."
"I shall come too, Sergeant,"
said Blouse, and only Polly saw Jackram grimace.
"Good idea, sir," said the sergeant. I suggest Perks and I come with you. Everyone got that? Get to the top, neat and quiet, and no one moves until you hear my signal."
"My signal?" said Blouse firmly.
"That's what I meant, sir. Quick and quiet. Hit them hard, but I want at least one left alive. Go."
The two teams fanned out to right and left and disappeared. The sergeant gave them a minute or two's start, and then set off with unusual speed for a man of his girth, so that, for a moment, Polly and the lieutenant were left standing. Behind them, a dejected Jade watched them go. The trees thinned out on the steep slope,
but not enough for much underbrush to get a hold. Polly found it easier to go on all fours, grabbing at tufts and saplings to steady herself. After a while, she caught a whiff of smoke, chemical and acrid. She was sure, too, that she could hear a faint clicking noise. A tree extended a hand and pulled her into its shadow.
"Don't you say a bleeding word," hissed Jackram. "Where's the Rupert?"
"Don't know, Sarge."
"Damn! You can't let a Rupert run around loose. There's no telling what he might take it into his little head to do, now that he's got the idea he's in charge. You're his minder. Find him!"
Polly slithered back down the slope and found Blouse steadying himself against a tree, wheezing gently.
"Ah! Perks!" he panted. "My asthma seems to be coming back."
"I'll help you up, sir," said Polly, grabbing his hand and tugging him forward. "Could you wheeze a little quieter, sir?" By degrees, dragging and pushing, she bundled the man up to Jackram's tree.
"Glad you could join us, sir," hissed the sergeant, face contorted into an expression of maddened affability. "If you'd care to wait here, Perks and me will crawl up the—"
"I'm coming too, sergeant,"
Blouse insisted.
Jackram hesitated. "Yes, sir," he said. "But with respect, sir, I know about skirmishing."
"Let's go, sergeant,"
said Blouse, dropping flat and beginning to drag himself forward.
"Yes, sir," muttered Jackram darkly.
Polly eased her way forward too. The grass here was shorter, rabbit-nibbled, with small bushes here and there. She concentrated on keeping the noise down and aimed for the clicking. The smell of chemical smoke grew stronger. It hung in the air around her, and as she moved forward, she saw light, little specks of it. She raised her head. There were three men a few feet away, silhouetted against the night. One of them was holding a large pipe about 5 feet long, balanced on his shoulder at one end and on a tripod at the other. That end was aimed at the distant hill. On the other end, a foot or so behind the man's head, was a big square box. Light was leaking from joints in this. From a little stovepipe chimney on the top of it, heavy smoke poured out.
"Perks, on the count of three," said Jackram on Polly's right.
"One, as you were, sergeant,"
said Blouse quietly on her left. Polly saw Jackram's big, florid face turn with an expression of astonishment.
"Sir?"
"Hold position," said Blouse.
Above them, the clicking continued. "Military secrets," thought Polly. "Spies. Enemies. And we're just watching." It was like seeing blood drain from an artery.
"Sir!"
hissed Jackram, rage smoking off him.
"Hold position, sergeant. That is an order," said Blouse calmly.
Jackram subsided, but only into the deceptive calm of a volcano waiting to explode. The relentless chatter of the clacks went on. It seemed to go on forever. Beside Polly, Sergeant Jackram seethed and fretted like a dog on a leash. The clicking stopped. Polly heard a distant murmur of conversation.
"Sergeant Jackram," whispered Blouse, "you may get them with all speed."
Jackram exploded out of the grass like a partridge.
"All right, my lads, up, boys and at 'em."
Polly's first thought, as she leapt up and ran, was that the distance was suddenly a lot wider than it had appeared. All three men had turned at the sound of Jackram's cry. The one with the clax tube was already dropping it and reaching for a sword, but Jackram was bearing down on him like a landslide. The man made the mistake of standing his ground. There was a brief clash of swords, and then a melee, and Sergeant Jackram was a sufficiently deadly melee all by himself. The second man flew past Polly, but she was running for the third one. He backed away from her, reaching up to his mouth, then turned to run and found himself face to face with Maledict.
"Don't let him swallow!" Polly yelled.
Maledict's arm shot up and lifted the struggling man aloft by his throat. It would have been a perfect operation had not the rest of the squad arrived, having put all their effort into running and leaving none of it to spare for slowing down. There were collisions. Maledict went down as his captive kicked him in the chest, and the man tried to scramble away, cannoning into Tonka. Polly leapt over Igorina, was almost tripped by a fallen Wazza, and threw herself desperately toward the quarry, now on his knees. He had a dagger out and waved it wildly in front of her, while he grasped his throat with his other hand and made choking noises. She knocked the knife away, ran behind him, and slapped him on the back as hard as she could. He fell forward. Before she could grab him, a hand lifted him bodily, and Jackram's voice roared, "Can't have the poor man choking to death, Perks!" His other hand punched the man in the stomach with a noise like meat hitting a slab. The man's eyes crossed, and something large and white flew out of his mouth and shot over Jackram's shoulder. Jackram dropped him and turned on Blouse.
"Sir, I protest, sir!" he said, quivering with anger. "We lay there and watched these devils sending who knows what messages, sir. Spies, sir. We could have got 'em right there and then, sir."
"And then, Sergeant," said Blouse.
"What?"
"Don't you think the people they were talking to would wonder what had happened if the messages had stopped in mid-flow?" said the Lieutenant.
"Even so, sir."
"Whereas now we have their device, Sergeant, and their masters don't know we have it," said Blouse.
"Yeah, well, but you said they were sending messages in code, sir, and—"
"I think we have their cipher book as well, Sarge," said Maledict, stepping forward with the white object in his hand.
"That man tried to eat it, Sarge, rice paper. But he rushed his food, you might say."
"And you dislodged it, Sergeant, and probably saved his life. Well done," said Blouse.
"But one of them got away, sir," said Jackram. "He'll soon get to—"
"Sergeant?"
Jade was rising over the grass. As she plodded nearer, they saw she was dragging a man by one foot. When she got closer, it became obvious that the man was dead. Living people have more head.
"I heard the shouting, and he came running, and I jumped up, and he come straight into me head first," Jade complained. "I didn't even get a chance to hit him."
"Well, Private, at least we can definitely say he was stopped," said Blouse.
"Sir, this man is dying,"
said Igorina, who was kneeling by the man Sergeant Jackram had so positively saved from choking.
"He hath been poisoned."
"Hath he? By whom?" said Blouse. "Are you sure?"
"The green foam coming out of his mouth is a definite clue, sir."
"What's funny, Private Maledict?" said Blouse. The vampire chuckled. "Oh, sorry, sir. They say to spies, if you're caught, eat the documents, don't they? A good way of making sure they don't give away any secrets. But you've got the soggy book in your hands, Private."
"Vampires can't be poisoned that easily, sir," said Maledict calmly.
"It was probably only fatal by mouth, in any case, sir," said Igorina. "Terrible stuff. Stuff. He's dead, sir. Nothing I can do."
"Poor fellow. Well, we have the codes anyway," said Blouse. "This is a great discovery, men."
"And a prisoner, sir, and a prisoner," said Jackram.
The one surviving man who had been operating the clacks groaned and tried to move.
"A bit bruised, I expect," Jackram added with some satisfaction. "When I land on someone, sir, they stay landed on."
"Two of you, bring him with us," said Blouse. "Sergeant, there's a few hours to dawn, and I want to be well away from here. I want the other two buried somewhere down in the woods, and—"
"You just have to say, 'Carry on, Sergeant, sir,'" said Jackram, and it was almost a wail. "That's how it works, sir. You tell me what you want, I give 'em the orders."
"Times are changing, Sergeant," said Blouse.